Welcome to What We Watch When We Drink, a Booze Dancing Entertainment Network podcast featuring lively discussions about movies, TV shows, and anything else that we're watching while we drink our favorite boozy beverages. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com, and if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Well, that's nice to hear. We haven't heard that for a while.
It's true. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It is a Whiskey Wednesday on the Booze Dancing Entertainment Network. It is What We Watch When We Drink. The Holy Triumphant is together again to talk whiskey and TV and movies. How are we doing, boys?
Woohoo!
We have two woohoos. We have a couple of woohoos in the crowd.
Three guys, right. Three whiskeys, a whole bunch of shows to talk about. I think it's gonna be a good night.
We're gonna be good. We want to remind everyone that we are live tonight. on YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram.
That's it. Big four.
That's right. Don't forget to go to boozedancing.com for all your news and notes and reviews, especially from these two gentlemen who love to sit around the murder table and review all kinds of fun things like whiskey and cigar humidors and what
anything
else?
Anything at all.
Send us the whole review.
You send it in, we'll review it at the murder table.
We got a lot of whiskey. We got some beers. We got some coffee liqueur coming for September 29th, National Coffee Day.
Oh, there we go.
All you coffee drinkers out there, I think I'm the only coffee drinker on this podcast.
I think you are. So lots of fun stuff on the on Instagram and wherever else you can get our go to the website boozedancing.com and check out all the fun reviews and such. Tonight you can definitely join the crowd and you can hop in and ask questions, hop in on the chats on these various channels, and we'll be happy to respond possibly. And we are going to have a nice night. This is kind of a special night because we are celebrating a very special distillery in Scotland on Islay, Kilholman. And this is the 20th anniversary of the distillery. Is that right, Ange?
That is correct. And it's also the 15th anniversary of Inpex being their U.S. distributor.
That's right.
Importer and distributor.
And we have been lucky enough to been sent three samples of whiskeys from Kilholman celebrating this, all from the wonderful folks up at Inpex Beverages in the Bay Area. We want to thank our friend Sam Filmus and Chris Udy for keeping us in the loop and sending us these wonderful whiskeys to go through and we'll talk about the distillery a little bit too.
One more thank you to Jeanette at Inpex.
Jeanette, yes.
She's given us movie suggestions and she handles a lot of the correspondence along with Sam. So thank you, Jeanette.
Okay, gents. So should we just bump right in and we want to chat a bit or we want to just jump into some whiskey talk?
Well, let's you want to do a whiskey and then we'll chat while we're we'll mix it up.
We'll just have some fun. Okay. So what do we start with?
The first one. Let's do the Kilholman 13-year-old limited edition. It is 50% ABV. I had just a little bit of notes. It's a 2025 limited release, matured for 13 years in a combination of bourbon barrels, octaves, and Calvados casks.
I like how you say octaves.
Octaves. I don't know. It says octaves. O-C-T-A-V-E-S. Is that octaves or octaves?
It's an octave.
I don't know. I don't know what that is, but
I don't know what that is either.
But that's okay. I don't care. At the end of the day, I'm concerned.
I believe it's kind of barrel. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Eight-sided barrel? I don't know. I don't know. I'm asking. I don't know.
It could be.
I don't know.
Well, the octagon. We do like Calvados.
Calvados. See, we do. We do. We do. Haven't had it in a long time.
All right. Me neither.
See, now, you know, I say Calvados, right? And I know it's based, it's an apple brandy, correct?
Correct.
So as soon as I go in, I smell like apple pie.
Yes, that's the problem with these, when you know too much going in.
Well, I just know that. I don't know much. I don't know anything.
I think it might be peated, too.
Just a little bit. A little smoky apple. Ooh, that'd be nice, right? Smoked apple pie.
Oh, yes.
Smoked apple pie.
Well, we know, Kilhoman being on Islay, they are a whiskey that is peated.
That smells fantastic.
It really does smell fantastic.
I gotta say, that smells really good. Mike, thoughts?
I hate you.
By the way, for the record, I really do believe that it was a Kilhoman that finally, your head came above water. Your head came above water out of the peat bog, and you said, "Ooh, I think I like smoky whiskey."
I was being waterboarded in the bog. And...
yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure it was a Machir Bay that won you over. But I could be wrong.
It smells fantastic.
That smells it so does. Good. I'm going in.
This was bourbon barrel, octave, and cover.
It's like applewood smoked apple pie. How about that? Am I reaching too far? Am I going too far?
Oh, even that first.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. Honey.
Yes.
Not you guys. Yeah. What is going on there? There is. I love the sweetness.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. There's a little bit of lemon. There's a little bit of maybe a little cinnamon. A little spice of some sort.
And apples, vinegar, barbecue. It's just good.
Oh, speaking of that, how was the pork?
Well, that's what we had that again tonight. That's what I'm
saying. How was the pork?
It was so good.
Yeah.
Here are you guys talking dinner?
He had his boy did a what? What'd you do? A 15 pound shoulder? Or what'd you do?
He's a chef.
Pork shoulder butt. Smoked it.
He smoked it.
Wait, is it a pork shoulder or is it a butt?
Pork shoulder butt. I guess it's the back leg.
No, it can't be. The shoulder's in the front. It can't be the back leg.
It's got
the leg is the leg and the shoulder is the shoulder.
But it's I'm sorry, they said pork shoulder butt is what they refer to it as.
Maybe it's the end of the maybe it's the end of the shoulder.
I don't know. I don't know.
Right? Am I wrong there?
Delicious.
Same.
I don't know pork.
And boneless, which was delicious.
Yeah, but I mean they're animals, and right? The back is the legs, the front's the shoulders. I mean
delicious.
That's delicious.
It's also known as the Boston butt. It's a cut from the upper portion of the pig's front shoulder, despite its misleading name. There you go. It originates from New England, where butchers would pack this cut into barrels called butts during the Revolutionary War. Hey, isn't that butts, barrels? This is all part of the plan tonight.
And if we can take those barrels and then age a little whiskey in it.
Stop.
That's like a pechuga.
So that was pretty damn delicious, I got to say.
That's a nice whiskey.
That is a yummy dram. Just the right amount of
heat.
Amount of spice.
I was surprised by this and am surprised by the amount of sweetness.
It's not saccharine. Sweetness. It's not saccharine.
No, in a good way.
Yeah.
And the smoke is really subtle. I don't think this is my problem. I think it's got to be a lot. I don't know how much smoke nowadays for me to even notice it. If there's any smoke in this, I don't get a whole lot of it, but then I can't catch smoke anymore. Cause I'm so used to it. I'm a peat head. What can I tell you?
No, you don't tell me anything.
We know. All right. Well, that is just memorable.
Delicious.
That is great.
By the way, you've been to Islay. Did you happen to go to Kilhoman?
Twice. The first time in 2014, this is 20 years of Kilhoman. So they started in 2005, right? Is that right? So we were there not too long after they started. And it was pretty young looking place at the time. The second time I went with my family, they were closed. So we couldn't get in. Oh well, but I want to go back. It's fun. It's on a big farm and pretty close to the ocean, and it's pretty neat.
Fun.
Yep.
I'm a fan.
I'm a fan too.
I don't think they've ever disappointed. I really don't.
No. When we've had on Anthony's son, remember that long ago?
Oh, yeah. Was that that was like the five continent thingy?
Yes, in one night. Yep. Yeah, that was a long time. The Wills brothers and Anthony have been to, Anthony, I think, is coming to California now on this whole tour to celebrate this. I'm not sure he's coming to LA. So it's a big trip here for the big celebration for the distillery, and Impex is a part of that. So cheers to them on 20 years. That's impressive.
It is.
They were used to be when I was there, they were the brand new kid, youngest distillery on the block by 200 years. Everyone was like really old compared to them. And now they're not the youngest anymore with all these other distilleries.
Yep. They're a teenager. They're not, a kid.
They are a teenager. Well, a 20-year-old, actually. They can almost drive.
They're an adult. Can they buy property? Hmm. What are you going to be, 21 to buy property?
I'm not sure in Scotland.
That's probably like 5. If you can sign your name, you can buy property.
All right. So we have gotten through the Kilhoman 13-year-old limited edition. We are going to sip on this a little bit while we talk a little bit about TV. This is what we watch when we drink. So we're going to talk about what we've been watching. We're going to go around the room and everyone's going to tell us about one thing they've been watching, and then we'll move on. Maybe two things that we've been watching. Where should we stop? Michael, what have you been watching lately
that we want to know about?
Wednesday. Oh, Wednesday. I forgot about Wednesday. Yes. The first half.
Wednesday. The whole thing. Both halves came out.
Oh, you started. Okay.
So yep, one on, they dropped the other one. We watched Netflix. Them both. It was very good. Very good. Interesting story. Well acted. They had much more of a role for Catherine Zeta-Jones and Luis Guzman this time around.
Guzman.
In season two.
Guzman. Yeah. It introduced some more characters.
And it's Luis.
It was really well done.
Yeah, we were watching it. We just started the second half of the second season. And
how many episodes in total?
I think it's like maybe 4 and 4, maybe 5 and 4,
I think,
or something like
that. 4. Yeah, I don't get this. I saw something about this a couple of days ago. This annoying trend to splitting seasons in half on streamers. It doesn't. I mean, I'm sure some of it's based on the calendar. You know what's going on in between, because it's already made. It's already shot. They're not finishing anything. Just release them all. If you're gonna do that, just release them all. I don't get it.
Well, it's the same thing with a streaming service releasing one a week. You have them all. Release them all at once.
Just put them out. I know. It's silly. I think it's fun. I mean, it gets a little, some of the style of humor gets a little old.
Yeah.
Wednesdays was a little bit, of course, if you don't know, this is based on the Addams Family comic from years ago. And slightly based on, I guess, the TV show from the 60s, maybe a little bit.
A little bit on the movies.
Yeah, and a little bit on the movies, right. Catherine Zeta-Jones plays Morticia, and what's his name? Luis Guzman plays Gomez, and Jenna Ortega plays the Star, Wednesday. And then there's lots of characters that come in this season. Steve Buscemi's the head of the school that Wednesday's going to. He's always funny. We like Mr. Bishop.
How's my Paisan? Is he good?
They have him great. An outrageous red wig and some very large teeth.
Yeah.
So they certainly camp him up quite a bit. And
yes.
They portray him as like like the worst, happiest principal ever.
True. Yes. My favorite character this season is Fred Armisen playing Uncle Fester. For a couple of episodes. He's pretty funny. And Jenna Ortega is really good. She seems like she's Wednesday. Whenever you see her in real life, she's almost like Wednesday.
And they expanded the role of her roommate, and they introduced the new younger character who is like her right hand, I guess, the person she gives tasks to that she doesn't want to do herself. Yes. So it's not just a single character. They've really brought in a lot of people this year.
And speaking of right hands, I think the unheralded star of the series
is Thing, a right hand.
Is Thing. He's that hand is very, very funny. It's very, very well acted. Whoever's hand that is, it's very, very well done. Very good. Ange, you got a show?
Beginning of the summer, probably in July, I watched The Hunting Wives on Netflix. Which stars Malin Ackerman as Margot Banks, Brittany Snow as Sophie O'Neill. And I mean, these are the three big stars. There's a lot of other people, but and Dermot Mulroney as Jed Banks.
So
I'll give you a little bit of a name. Yeah. Sophie O'Neill moves to deep East Texas and succumbs to socialite Margot's charms. Her life is soon consumed by obsession, seduction, and murder. It's a sleazy good time. It is a sleazy, trashy show.
Is that their tagline or is that your line?
That's my tagline. Okay, it's a sleazy, trashy good time.
I don't think I know this. What's it on?
It's on Netflix.
Netflix. I've heard of it.
Brittany Snow was in the, what was she in? What were those movies? The
Pitch Perfect.
Pitch Perfect movies. She was very good in this. Malin Ackerman's been around. I can't think of what she was in. She's been in a lot of stuff. I just can't remember what she was in. But she was good too. And Darren Mulroney, he plays Malin's husband. And there's just a whole lot of stuff going on. There's a little murder, there's a little mayhem, there's a whole lot of sex.
We like both of all that stuff.
There's some humor. You know, there's some guns because there's the hunting wives. There's a whole lot of drinking. So yeah, it was
all brand name stuff? Any brand name whiskey in there?
I don't remember. I mean, there was probably a lot of tequila.
Where's it supposed to be?
Like East Texas.
Yeah, it's East Texas.
It's in Texas. And Dermot Mulroney plays a guy who's running for office. And Malin Ackerman, she's got a bit of a sketchy past, but she's married to him. And, you know, just a lot of things that happen. A lot of things. It was an interesting show. That's all I'll say.
Six or eight episodes?
I think it's like eight. And then Brittany Snow, she's originally, I think, from Boston, her character. They move to Texas. Her husband gets a job. She's on the wagon. There's the whole backstory to why she's on the wagon. And things go a little off the rails. Things go a lot off the rails. There's a little bit of a murder mystery thing going on. There's all kinds of stuff going on. So, again, like I said, it's a sleazy, trashy seasons? Good time. No, one.
Two seasons?
So far, as far as I know, it's only one season. I don't know if it's been renewed.
Okay.
And it's based on a book. Yeah. I don't remember what the book is. I guess The Hunting
Wives. Are you excited about season two?
I don't know if
there is one.
If there is one, sure. I want to see where it goes.
There you go.
Sure. Why not?
Nice.
You?
Okay. So I'm just going to read the synopsis on this one. Deb, a 40-something single mother, is trying to rebuild her life with her boyfriend, Dev. Her two adult daughters, Josie and Billy, still live with her and complicate her life. The older sibling, Josie, is navigating mental illness and her sexual identity. Her younger sister, Billy, is in toxic relationships. This show is called Such Brave Girls, and it's a British sitcom on, I think it was on Hulu.
Oh, it sounds Hulu. Hilarious, doesn't it, Mike?
It is. It actually really is. It's weirdly hilarious.
Okay.
Imagine, but it's British. It's British humor, right? This woman who doesn't have a lot of money, she's her husband has left her as the story, the recurring theme is he went out for tea bags one night, went out for tea and never came
back.
What'd
you say? He went out for what?
Tea.
Oh, okay.
Tea.
I thought you said something.
Nope. And she's been dating this gentleman who has a job, he's got money, he's got a huge house, and she's just trying to get in that big house away from their small little home that her and her two daughters live in. And this gentleman never pays for anything throughout the whole series. He never pulled out a card. She's always having to pay for things. She has no money. It costs. She's just, you know, car gets impounded.
So rich.
I don't know. Exactly. That's right. And her two daughters, they're actually really real life sisters. They are, Kat Sadler is, I think she's a stand-up comedian. In England, she wrote this thing herself, and she's the more despondent, sexual identity searching, daughter who actually has a boyfriend who lives with her. A boyfriend is obsessed with her. She wants nothing to do with him, but he pays attention to her. So she kind of like has him hang around. Yeah. And then the girl and her sister is obsessed with one gentleman who is like the town Lothario. He's got girls everywhere and every girl thinks he's got, you know, they're the one. And they turns out that he's kind of scamming them all, but no one can figure that out. So this daughter does everything to stay in his heart. It is crazy. It is very funny. It's a lot of female humor, female sensitive humor. It is wacky British stuff. And I
what's it called again?
Such Brave Girls.
Such Brave Girls. Okay. Is it a recent show? Such
Brave Girls. It came out in 2023, I think.
Okay.
That's what it says here. Two seasons. I didn't notice this, but the titles of all the episodes, the first one's called Such Happy Girls. The second one's Such Unavailable Girls. Such Birthday Girls. Such Outdoorsy Girls. Such Friendly Girls. Such Daddy's Girls. Such Kept Girls. It's very funny.
I see a pattern.
There's a pattern, yes.
If Norman Lear were still alive, would he be stealing this British show and trying to put it on CBS? He
probably would and change CBS it around. Yes.
A show
yes.
coming to you?
Correct. Yeah. You're correct. It's very funny. Anyway, Such Brave Girls on Hulu. That's my first pick. Why don't we go around again and then we'll have a whiskey when we do that?
Okay.
Mike, got an Evelyn?
I really haven't watched much of anything besides the Phillies.
The Phillies?
And they're on the West Coast now, which is brutal because the games don't start until 10, and then they keep running until, you know, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. They're brutal.
I have a tough time staying up to watch Phillies here in L.A. I have a tough time staying up till 9:30, 10 o'clock to watch end of games, too. Yeah, it's the problem. The late night thing is tough. My youngest
just started back to high school, and he's had to forego watching these two games. And then he comes home from school and says, "Did you watch the game? What was it? Because the Phillies had big rallies back and forth with the Dodgers.
Yes,
they go up, Dodgers go up, back and forth, and it was very exciting baseball. For so many games into the season, you don't expect really much exciting baseball left. And
yep.
It's really something to watch two teams play that are both really good teams.
Yes, and from my standpoint, it's really horrible to watch a team implode here at the end of the season with a very bad bullpen.
Well, they played, though. They rallied back. Five innings yesterday.
Well, we are some greatness. You know, the Phillies have an amazing player in Kyle Schwarber, and the Dodgers have this unicorn in Shohei Ohtani, who last night, as this is live tonight, last night he pitched five no-hit innings and then hit his 50th home run of the season.
Jeez.
Of course, no one has ever done that. Also, his 50th home run season, two in a row, which only a couple of people have done. And Aaron Judge will probably do that again, too. So we are definitely seeing some greatness. And those two guys are probably going to battle it out for MVP of the National League till the end of the season here.
Yeah.
So, and then maybe they'll meet again in the playoffs. We'll see. Ange, got another one?
Yes. There's a show called Love Life.
Love Life.
And it was originally one of the first shows when HBO Max launched back in 2020.
Yeah.
It was one of their first shows. And it was on there for a couple of years, and then it got dropped. And then the show was hanging in limbo for a year or two, and now it got picked up by Netflix. So both seasons are on Netflix. Season one is with Anna Kendrick. She's the star of the show, and the storyline revolves around her and her love life. And season two is with William Jackson Harper, who was one of the stars. He was one of the stars of The Good Place.
Oh.
And season two revolves around his love life. So Anna Kendrick plays Darby, and William Jackson Harper plays Marcus Watkins. And there's a little bit of they're two independent stories, but there is some crossover between the two seasons. There's a little bit of crossover. So the storyline is romantic comedy anthology series about the journey from first love to lasting love and how the people we're with along the way make us into who we are when we finally end up with someone forever. First season follows Darby after a swift romance and breakup. The second season focus shifts to Marcus after his divorce. Really liked it. I watched it the first time. Well, actually, I watched it maybe a couple years down the road when it came on HBO. I kind of wasn't a big fan of Anna Kendrick, or I thought I wasn't. Then I watched the show, and she was fantastic. So, and then I start watching other things with Anna Kendrick, and I'm like, you know what? Maybe I like Anna Kendrick.
Up in the Air is pretty good.
What's this?
Up in the Air is pretty good.
Up in the Air, she's great. She's great in this. She directed a movie on Netflix called Woman of the Hour, which she also starred in. Also really good. So I take it all back. I'm a fan. I like her.
And did you prefer season one over season two?
Well, you know, it's funny because I watched season two first when it was on HBO because my Anna Kendrick prejudice. And I liked William Jackson Harper. But then I went back and then I saw the crossover and I went back and watched season one. I'm like, all right, it's pretty damn good. So, and both shows end their seasons really, really well. The ending of season one is just fantastic. The last episode is just really, really good. And the same could be said about season two. So it's just a really good show.
I need to finish it. I started when you told me about it the first time.
Yeah.
And I didn't get into it. I watched the first episode. I restarted it after you told me you rewatched it. And I've watched, I think, the first three episodes of season one. So I need to go and dive back
into it. It moves pretty fast. And once you get into it, it's like, oh, what's going to happen next? So it's really good. It's fun. It's funny. It's touching. It's good.
Do we know if there's another season coming?
I don't know. Maybe now that it's been picked up by Netflix and maybe it's doing okay. Yeah. You know, for whatever reason, HBO Max dropped it. And, you know, I don't know.
Good. All right.
A lot of other shows have come back because of Netflix.
Yeah.
This is true. Very, very true. I just finished The Paper on Peacock. It's not really a reboot. It's a sequel. I don't know what you'd call this of The Office. Right. Yeah. And starring, let's see, how do they call it? In Toledo, Ohio, the same documentary crew that followed the workers at Dunder Mifflin Scranton PA branch 20 years earlier focuses its efforts on the Toledo Truth Teller, a historic but declining Midwestern newspaper trying to resurrect itself with volunteer reporters.
I'm sure that goes well.
It's from I think the same folks that ran The Office. Yeah. Same folks, same style, mockumentary style. Starring Donald Gleason. The story is the documentary team goes to where they're trying to go back to the office scenario, the Dunder Mifflin, and they're not there anymore. And it turns out, remember, they were an office supply company, right?
Yeah,
right.
Closed.
Paper. Yeah. And they got bought by some bigger company. And they got they got absorbed by a company that has all kinds of paper products, toilet paper, tissue, all kinds of paper products. And they get moved into, that's not really, whatever's left of it gets absorbed and put into this bigger building. And there are all these paper companies, all subsidiaries in this one building, which used to be this old newspaper's building. And the on the same floor in the same bullpen is this newspaper crew, which are basically just putting out like, internet stuff and clickbait. That's all they're really doing. They're not even really a money making thing except for the clickbait. They're not really a journalism factory. And they're on the same floor as the guy selling toilet paper. They're in the same office. It's kind of weird. And Donald Gleason comes in to be the new editor in chief. And he's got these he used to be toilet paper sales guy of the year for the same company. And he came in and now he wants to bring back real journalism, bring back, you know, small time, you know, news, the whole thing. And he's got these group of people who don't really work hard and don't need to because they're just putting out clickbait. There is one person that is still that is really into a journalism person who really wants to be a real journalist. And she is Chelsea Fry. I believe that's her name. Mare Pretty is the actress's name, the character's name. And of course, Donald has to fight against there's a couple folks that are above him that work for the bigger corporation, and they don't really they're happy with the clickbait attitude. They don't want to do anything more complicated, more newsy. And he's kind of bumbling as a editor in chief, of as you can imagine. Donald's listening. He's American. There's no more Irish accent. And there's one character from The Office who somehow made it to this is Oscar Martinez, who was the accountant back at Dunder Mifflin, and now he's kind of the same thing at this place. So he's the one thread that still connects them. It's fun. I think if I was watching The Office again, rewatching it, this is how my reaction would be the same. I wouldn't be laughing. I think this is funny. Funny.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be like laughing. It's not a side and splitter. That's how this. Yeah. Yes, it's not a side splitter. It's fun. The whole attitude is fun. It's The Office, but it's not laugh out loud funny.
Yeah.
So, it's gotten a lot of great reviews. I think, and I think it's already been renewed for season two. Donald Gleason's great. He's great, and the love interest reporter she's great too. And all the wacky characters on, you know, the around the edges are fun, you know. So it's just basically The Office. You could switch out characters and they're the same. They're playing the same people. So there you go. The paper on the Peacock. There you go.
Fun.
Yeah. Okay. We are going into our second Kill Homan for the night.
Yes.
Reminder, this is What We Watch When We Drink on the Booze Dancing Entertainment Network. Where are we going to with now? We are...
What's this is one? The Cask Evolution 2. Oh, okay, wait. This is the Kill Homan Impact's Cask Evolution 2/2025. It's a 5-year-old Muscatel Barrique cask, number 19 of 1474. Whatever that means. Or 19/1474.
It's probably the number of it, right?
I guess. All right, let's do that. Cask. Let's do this one. This so, one, what I said was 58.4%.
Right.
So, yeah. That's all I'm going to say.
No, this is because I believe this is a barrel pick, right? From,
I think so.
For Impex.
Let me see if there's more information on the website while you're gabbing away over there.
Oh, that's totally different.
Is there anything on here? Let me see. Let me see what it says here. Okay, the Muscatel. This single cask bottled at 58.4 ABV exclusively for Impex Beverages was matured for 5 years in a fresh Muscatel Blanc barrique. During its maturation, the Muscat cask has added layers of honeysuckle and stone fruit, which balance beautifully with the natural citrus and peat smell character of Kill Homan single malts. All right. Oh, that is very different.
Yeah.
Very different. You know, so for 58.4,
it's been the entire 5 years, or is it something and then 5 years afterwards?
The Muscat, yeah, it says 5 year old, so I guess just the 5 years. That's what it sounds like, right?
It seems like it tamped down the peat and up the sweet. I get a lot more sweetness on the nose.
That sounds pretty good. Tamp down the peat and up the sweet. Look at you.
Yeah.
Oh, it's got some heat to it.
We should try that with you. See if we can up the sweet.
Up the sweet? No, it's impossible.
Yeah. Tamp down some of the peat.
No. Ooh, that's a hot one.
You know, for 58, I thought it'd be hotter.
Can't hear you, Aaron. You're on mute.
There we go.
There you go. Yep.
Dark fruits.
It's a little dry.
Yeah.
It's got some dryness to it.
Dry and finish, yeah.
Well, that's good, though. I like that. I get a little bit of honey. Not so much. I don't know about honeysuckle. I don't know what honeysuckle tastes like. But maybe a little bit of honey. Maybe some peaches.
Rich. I hate saying that, but yeah. Rich.
Yeah.
Then plums.
It's a little oily. It's got a little bit of oiliness to it, even though it's kind of dry. It's all like the front. I mean, it's very astringent. And I don't know if it's the 58.4, maybe it's the cask.
Yeah.
A little bit of both.
Maybe a second swill, maybe.
And a short finish.
That's good. I like that. I think I like the first one a little better, but I do like this. This is very nice.
Muscatels, I think I've had a few Muscatel finishes, and they're different. And
Muscatel's a sweet wine, right?
It borders on the sweet, I guess, or heads towards sweet.
Yeah, I mean, there is some sweetness here. Yeah. You know, almost like a peach preserves.
Yeah, peach pie. I just got a little peach pie.
A little honey. Yeah. No crust, though. I could really go for a nice buttery crust. A nice flaky crust to match my flaky personality.
Krusty, want some crust? What a surprise.
That wasn't very nice.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't very nice.
That wasn't nice at all.
Sorry, it just slipped out. I thought I was on mute.
Yeah, you thought you were on mute. I could put you in the green room.
I don't want to go to the green room.
All right, then. There's no snacks. We only have catering when we have guests.
And Aaron froze.
Speaking of game, what happened?
He froze.
Oh, jeez. Hopefully he comes back. Come back, Aaron. Come back.
Pull Joe in instead.
You know, again, didn't all this technology start in California?
Yeah, but they're falling into the ocean, so, you know, you can't expect this to work.
Is that what it is?
Little by little, they're falling into the ocean.
Do you have a preference between the first two?
I think I like the first one as more of a sipper.
Yeah.
The second one, that would be like, you know, one drink. You're not going to do much with that. I don't know you're going to drink the second one of those.
Okay.
For two reasons. It's 58.5, but also
right.
The flavor profile. I don't know if that's something you'd have two of in the same night.
All the time. You know what? It almost has, you know what? Like, how about like an aperitif? Like just to kind of get you
started. I'm always looking for something to have after dinner. That would be delicious.
No, before dinner. This will be four.
Before dinner.
I'm saying to get you started.
I thought you said for dinner.
No. Before dinner.
Before dinner.
Before. An aperitif. An aperitivo.
I thought you were saying for dinner.
A little aperitivo, maybe some cheese, you know, with a nice, like, some cheese with some jam on it. Maybe, you know.
I'm always looking for the one to have with dessert.
Yeah. Well, no, the first one goes with dessert.
Yeah, but the first one you could drink outside of a meal. This one will be great with a meal.
Oh, geez.
Or your cheese plate.
His Wi-Fi is flipping out. His Wi-Fi is flipping out.
We just switched. We switched our Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah. How was it?
So far, so good. We had some issues setting up some of the streaming services yesterday, but we think we ironed that out today.
All right. Good.
And the new 85-incher came.
Oh. So
we have an enormous television.
Very nice. Very nice. Very nice. Good. Then you can start watching some more shows. Or actually, you know.
A stand. Can you imagine putting an 85-inch TV on a stand?
Depends on the stand.
I would be terrified that would fall.
I'd have to see it.
I would think that would be wall-mounted. It's a very sturdy-looking stand, but even still.
Yeah.
I'm terrified that would go somewhere.
All right. Well, he says to carry on, so I guess we should just carry on.
Soldier on without him.
Let's carry on, wayward son. So, all right. So we like the first one a little better.
A little more. Well, they're different, but I think I like the first one better.
Okay.
I think that's fair.
Okay. Yeah, I like the first one better. I like this one, but I like the first one better.
Yeah.
The first one's one like, ooh, I really would like some more.
It's the, you know, B-A+. You know, it's the same grade. What's the difference?
Well, the first one, I would go like an A minus on that one.
That's A minus A. You know, we're right there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, all right, let's continue. Shall we move on to more shows or movies or whatever you've been watching? Or haven't you watched much?
I haven't really watched much. The kids have the TV, so they pretty much are watching food shows all the time, which is just the worst. And I've been swamped with work. We went on vacation. You know, I didn't watch anything then. But now, you know, things I want to watch, I got to watch a lot of things with Helen Mirren and Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, okay. That's right. You got to go
watch
back.
Wildlands. I want to watch the Detective Society or whatever that is.
Well, that's two shows in a row with them.
Yeah.
Like, are they old friends? I don't know. I don't remember them starring in anything.
I guess they are now.
I guess. Although, I think Pierce Brosnan was in The Long Good Friday, which I talked about before with Helen Mirren and Bob Hoskins.
So they did work together before. Yeah.
Yeah, a long time ago though. We're talking like the 70s or maybe the 80s. So maybe they go back that far. So anyway, what I watched actually that I thought was kind of interesting, you know, that Spike Lee movie that came out, Highest to Lowest with Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
So that movie is based upon an Akira Kurosawa movie called High and Low. So I kind of wanted to go see Highest and Lowest in the theater, but nobody wanted to go. So I was like, all right, whatever. I knew it was coming out on Apple like last week. So I figured I'll just wait for it to come out on Apple. So in the meantime, High and Low was on HBO Max. So I decided to watch it. And I got to say, it was really, really good. You know, once you get into the rhythm, because it's like, you know, it's a 60s movie, number one. It's in black and white, number two. And number three, it's subtitled in Japanese. So you kind of got to get into the flow of watching the movie. It's
subtitled in English.
Well, I'm sorry. It's spoken in Japanese.
Japanese.
Subtitled in English. Thank you.
I was going to say, if they subtitle in Japanese, that's not helping you at all.
Well, you know, not at all. Right. So, yeah, it was actually really, really good. All black and white. Really cool. It's kind of interesting because it's basically broken up. It's like, you know, there's three acts, I guess. The first act is almost like all takes place in the main character's apartment, Toshiro Mifune, who's been in all of like Kurosawa's movies.
Yeah.
So the first part takes place in the apartment. Then there's like this whole big crazy scene in the middle, and then the second half or the back nine of the movie is basically like a police drama, you know, the cops, a procedural, if you will,
right,
of them trying to find out what happened. So I'll give you just the beef storyline. A wealthy businessman is told his son has been kidnapped and he will have to pay a very large sum for him to be returned safely. It is then discovered that his son is safe at home. The kidnapper took his chauffeur's son by accident. The kidnapper says this makes no difference. Pay up or the child dies. This leaves him with a moral dilemma as he really needs the money to conclude a very important business deal. So it was really interesting and it was really cool to watch. You know, and, you know, unlike, I always hear Akira Kurosawa and I'm thinking always about the you know, the samurai epics.
Right.
This was like modern day.
Right.
Because it takes place in the 60s and, you know, the guy runs this like shoe factory and there's a bit of, I don't know what you want to call it. There's a bit of a war for who's going to run the company and he's putting up a lot of money. And then unfortunately this thing happens and he's kind of strapped for cash and it's just the dilemmas, you know, what does he do? It was pretty interesting. It was really, really
new chauffeur, obviously.
Well, what was cool about it too is just a lot of the stuff, the way it played out.
Right.
You know, there was all this talk about, you know, public relations and this, that, the other thing, and your perception if you do this, and what if the public finds out, and all this kind of stuff. So it was pretty interesting. It was really good.
Have you watched the Spike Lee one yet?
I did.
What did you think of that?
I watched it last week.
What'd you think compared to the first?
Oh, not compared to the first, it's not good. It wasn't
it's
good.
I mean,
it
was good, okay. It's not as good.
It's not good. They changed some things. No. You know, like I liked the second part of the first movie with the whole police procedural.
Right.
Then, like with the second movie, it almost becomes like, you know, like The Equalizer or Taken or whatever, and it's a little far fetched. It's a lot far-fetched. So it gets.
They talk all the time about, like, it might have been like a director like John Ford or somebody talking about remaking great movies.
Right.
And the response was like, don't remake great movies. Remake the terrible movies I made, the ones that didn't work. Why would you remake a great movie? Like, you need to go in and like take what I did wrong and make it better. So for Spike Lee to go in and take a Kurosawa movie, like, why would you take that one? Why don't you take a different movie?
Yeah, I mean, supposedly the Kurosawa movie is one of the most, what do you want to call it, influential crime movies?
Yeah, but you're just like, why remake that movie? Why don't you remake something that wasn't very good?
Yeah, what is going on with Aaron's sound? You got some crazy sound going on there, buddy. But anyway, going back to the highest to lowest. Yeah, I don't know. It was just very odd. The dialogue wasn't great.
No.
You know, I didn't like the speechifying. Denzel wasn't his usual really good self. I didn't even like Jeffrey Wright all that much.
Wow.
It was just,
and you love Jeffrey Wright.
I do like Jeffrey Wright. Jeffrey Wright's fantastic. Who doesn't love Denzel? Denzel's usually pretty great too. So I don't know what he's doing over there. What is he doing?
I'm back, guys. Sorry. I'm on my iPad now. Let's hope this works.
You're on your iPad now? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know how this is going to work with a recording thing, but whatever. We'll figure that out. Yeah, so highest to lowest, not as good.
Yeah.
It was a little bit, you know, the music was like intrusive. You know, it was like the constant music going on in the background, that melodramatic score.
Right.
Which sometimes works in a Spike Lee movie. I didn't think it worked in this one.
Yeah.
I thought it was noticeable. It didn't add to it. So, yeah, I don't know. It wasn't good.
So he took a long time off, and this is the movie he makes coming back? And you're kind of, eh.
And, you know, maybe if I didn't see the first one.
Right. Something to compare it to.
Yeah, the first one was really good. It was really, really good. I mean, it's a little long. It's like 2.5 hours. But you know, it plays out pretty well. And again, once you get into the rhythm of the first movie, it's very good. And there's this one scene in the middle where they're like, basically the guy pays the ransom to get the kid back. It is really well orchestrated. It was really cool the way they did it. Because it all takes place on a train.
Right.
And it was good. It was really, really good. So yeah, that's what I got. Thoughts on that whiskey, Aaron?
Is it my turn?
Well, you didn't finish your thoughts on the whiskey, did you?
I like it. It's surprisingly drying. You know, it's it's maybe because the ABV is so hot, but I like it. It's a little bit one of those confusing whiskeys to me. It's a little bit, there's a little too much going on, maybe. I don't know. I think I need to have a lot more to really to see if I love it or not. But it's
a little bit country and a little bit rock and roll. I can't really put it
correct. Forward. Yes, I am the Donnie and Marie of the.
We were thinking that I thought it would be good with dessert. Angelo thought it'd be good to start the meal with like a cheese plate or something along those lines.
I think I lean towards dessert because of the muscatel. Yeah, it feels like a later in the evening kind of whiskey.
I think the first one's more of a later in the evening kind of whiskey. That one, like the first one, I could have as dessert.
Well. The first one's way sweeter for sure. But that's logical that you think that's the ending of an evening, but that's my wheelhouse. That sweeter kind of,
That's his breakfast whiskey.
My
too.
Breakfast whiskey. Yeah.
With chicken and waffles.
It's 10 o'clock midday, 2:30. Pretty much
chicken and waffles.
I'm going to keep drinking this one to see if I can figure out more about it.
Yeah, I think I need to revisit it as well. So I did like the first
one. Went back around and we did our thing, and you're up, Aaron.
Okay. So did you guys talk about in my little trip away there? Did you guys talk about Task?
No.
No, I didn't get to that yet. But I talked about High and Low, the Kurosawa movie, and then Highest to Lowest. The Spike Lee homage to the Kurosawa movie.
Oh, yeah.
In a nutshell, skip Highest to Lowest, watch High and Low.
Got it. Okay.
So that's all I got to say.
Well, I thought you guys would jump all over this Task thing because it's from the same guys.
Oh, it's on my list.
Yeah, it's from the mayor of Easttown people on HBO. A limited series. I'm not sure how many episodes there are. It comes out. Oh, I think it's seven.
I think it's going to be. Is it seven?
Yeah, I just see seven here. Crime drama follows an FBI agent leading a task force to investigate a string of robberies. Premiered on September 7th. They've only had two episodes appear so far. It's from Brad Inglesby, who created Mayor of Easttown. Stars Mark Ruffalo, who's the FBI agent who is put in. He's kind of at the end of his career-ish, and he's
I think he's at the end of his rope.
End of his rope, too. And he has to be the leader of this task force to figure out these crimes that are going on. Tom Pelfrey, I believe. I'm pretty sure he's the bad guy, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. So he and this reminds me of another show, Ange, that we watched, I think, on Apple. You'll know what this is when I started describing this. He and his partner, they go through the trash cans of certain houses to determine what's going on in that house. And then they go in and figure out that house is like moving drugs.
Oh, wait, this show or the show?
This show.
Yeah. Okay.
And what was that legal? What was that? Dope Fiend?
Oh yeah. Where, right.
So those guys were
robbing houses. Yeah.
Right. So this is what these guys are doing. They're robbing the houses that are run by drug guys.
Basically they're Omar.
Correct. And so it's going great until they get some, and they go in wearing masks, right? So nobody can tell who they are. And then they've hit a bunch of houses. So that's why the FBI is kind of involved here. And then they hit one house that is the turning point because there's something bigger going on. I don't want to give it away, but there's something bigger going on, and they've kind of involved themselves, and they have to, and they loot. There's a third person in their group too that their third partner, and so because it explodes, and then there's a kid involved. That's really when Mark Ruffalo's group has to really, you know, pick things up to figure out what's going on. Ruffalo is a former priest, we learned in season two, episode two, and he came to the FBI in some crazy fashion long ago. But he's Mark Ruffalo. He's scruffy. He's just Mark Ruffalo. He's got a lot of issues here at the end. He's got family issues. He's got his own issues. He drinks too much. Blah blah blah, and I don't.
Have you watched the first two episodes?
I've watched the first two. I don't know that I love it yet, but I think I.
It's getting better. It's getting. It's definitely building.
I think I will like it more into it, but so far I'm not. Right. I'm not totally in love with it yet. So, but I wanted to bring it up.
It's good.
Yeah,
it's good. So far, it's good. I like Pelfrey.
He is. What's he from? Where do I know him from?
Pelfrey was what's her name's brother? Wendy's brother on Ozark.
Ozark, yeah. Yeah.
And he was also in Banshee. He was like the cop that was with the.
Right.
With the white supremacists?
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, he's good.
He's really good. Yes.
And he apparently got his start in soap operas.
Oh, that's interesting.
Don't they?
And he's a. I think he's a Rutgers grad.
So there's a definite, you know, Eastern. PA, Northeastern.
Oh my God! Yeah, all the hoagies and the talk about the Phillies, and they got the Wah Wah and all that stuff.
Did you listen?
The drinking Yingling.
Did you listen?
The whole bit.
Did you listen to the Watch about?
I listened on the second. I listened about season two, about episode two.
So there was, they make a reference about how whether or not this follows the Eagles season.
Right.
Did you hear that they talk about season one or game one?
Right. If they get the bye, then they won't have an episode. They might skip it.
It's really, the references will be funny. Yeah.
That's pretty funny. Yes. I mean, Ruffalo's like basically, he's a borderline alcoholic, if not a full fledged alcoholic.
Correct.
And he's drinking vodka out of a Phillies baseball cup.
Yes. Yep. In the game. The woman that plays
Maeve?
Who's Maeve? This is Pelfrey's
niece.
Pelfrey's niece. She's really good.
She's really good.
She's really
she's
good.
She's very good.
She's going to be, I think, a star by the end of this thing, I think.
I think she's English.
Oh, really? That's funny. She's not.
Well, all of them. The only ones that are American, I think, are Pelfrey and Ruffalo. And,
oh, is that true? I didn't know that.
All three cops or all four cops are either Irish or English.
Oh, that's really funny.
And Maeve is, I think, English or Irish or whatever. I don't know what the hell's going on.
That's
with that,
really so. Funny. Well, what's her name from Mayor of Easttown? She
right. right, English.
Yeah, British. So that's episode two. It's just rolling. It's I would say it's HBO's new big hit or big thing right now, right?
Yeah, it's good. It's well done. Yep. It's been pretty good so far.
Episode
two was really good.
Yes, I like two better than one. I did.
Yeah. One was maybe a little bit too much,
yeah.
What do you want to call it,
yeah.
Stage setting, you know?
Yeah, it's going to set the table.
The second one's starting to, the second one's starting to pick up.
Yep. Sure, you have another one while we're here?
Sure.
So the other one I watched on it just came out on Netflix. And I like these limited series shows, five episodes. It's called Hostage.
Okay.
And
oh yeah, how was that?
I really liked it. British political thriller, directed, starring Saran Jones and Julie Delpy. You guys know Julie Delpy, probably.
Yeah.
French. As a fictional, they're both the British Prime Minister and the French Prime Minister, respectively. An international summit between the French and British leaders goes awry when the husband of the British Prime Minister is kidnapped and the French president is blackmailed. It's kind of a convoluted story, but Saran Jones, she's the British Prime Minister. Her husband is a doctor who is on a trip to French Guiana with some other doctors to help a village of some sort. And he is, the whole team is kidnapped. While this is going on, the two prime ministers are trying to figure out the British health system is a mess, which I believe it really is actually a mess, and no one can get cancer drugs, no one can get any important pharmaceuticals, so they're trying to get an emergency shipment from the French. Julie Delpy is trying to ward off her opponents and save her political life. They are all of France is anti-immigration, and all their immigrants are coming from England. So the French Parliament wants to put French soldiers on UK land to stop migrants coming to France. So the prime ministers have to figure out how this is going to work, if it can, and it probably won't. And it's all connected to this kidnapping. And it gets a little soap opera a little bit. But actually, it's kind of fun, and not funny, but fun. I like Saran Jones; she's really good. I saw her in a Scottish based show where she's an attorney on a trying to investigate a murder on a British naval ship. But I liked it, and it's short; it's five episodes. It's easy. I'd watch it again. It's good.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So we went through round two. Believe, right, boys? You guys are out. Mike, what were your two shows? I didn't hear them.
Round three. I was just talking about sports.
Oh, I can't have no.
He's behind. He's very behind.
Right. That's where I get zapped out, where I struck out. Okay. So let's move on to our final. Yeah, our final whiskey from Kilhoman. And again, thank you to Impex Beverages for these lovely whiskeys. Ange, why don't you take it away here?
Okay. Kilhoman, 13-year-old. A 2025... Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Wrong one. Kilhoman 20th anniversary.
Yep.
14-year-old, 100% Islay sherry cask. We've dedicated this particular expression from the 20th anniversary series to the tour. So, oh, yeah. There's going to be...
Yes.
Anthony Willis is going to be... Wills is going to be on tour, I think, the end of this month.
Correct. He's got... I don't know how many cities in that... Cross country, but I know he's.
Yeah, but, I've got the email somewhere.
Yeah,
I'll probably read it off.
Joining us, he's going to September. He starts a tour in Denver, then coming through Reno, Portland, and then Whiskey's the World in San Francisco and San Jose, I think later in the month or October, not coming to LA.
What's
not coming to LA?
Isla mean?
What's that?
What's 100% Isla mean?
So that means,
I guess, all the barley's grown on Isla.
Correct.
Everything's grown on Isla. Correct. So the other ones might not be.
Correct.
Right.
Yep. So remember, Kilhoman is on a farm, and when they started, I can't remember the percentage. A lot of their barley was coming right from the farm. When I was there the first time, literally, there's a little path where you drive through. One side of is this distillery, and a little farther away is like stables. And then the other side of this pathway is a big barn where all the barley was just laying there. And they're literally scooping it up with a bulldozer to move it from here to there. They have a small malting floor, or had a small malting floor. I don't remember the percentage of, and that a lot of that barley was coming, I believe, from their own this own farm that's on that they're on. I don't know if they own the farm or not. I think they do. But you can't. There's not enough barley yield there to have a whole brand. So
to do everything.
Yeah, and so they get it from other sources outside of Isla, and that's true of Berkeley and probably pretty much everybody. You can't. There's not enough grown there on Isla.
Yep.
So, Berkeley does the same thing. I think the blue cans are 100% Isla, and the yellow ones are 100% not Isla, I think, or maybe it's the other way around. Ooh.
How's it taste?
I like
you
it.
For a taste already?
I did.
Not a lot on the nose, but the taste is
correct.
Pretty good.
I thought the nose was nothing. Wow.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's a winner.
That's nice.
Holy moly. What was the ABV?
Nice finish.
That's
too.
55%.
55.
Yeah.
Nice finish.
Ooh. Not super sweet. A little bit of dryness going on, tip of the tongue. A little bit of that nice brown sugars and, you know, molasses maybe. Then you get some stone fruit.
Boy, that's delicious.
Mm. Sherry rolling through.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it fun?
And it actually is a nice, a little short, but a nice finish too.
Yeah. It's so.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, this is one where the first taste and the second taste were pretty much the same. It didn't change a lot for me.
Yeah.
That that second one, the first taste was not standout. Second got better. I really like this a lot.
This is good. That's delicious. I mean, we've had their sherries before.
We have, right?
Yeah. And they do a really nice job of it.
What's that?
They really do.
Is it the Mocker Bay, is that's the sherry cask?
I don't know if that's a sherry cask. I don't think that is.
No, that's it's the
Senang or whatever Senang, that is.
Right. So Senang.
I think the Mocker Bay is a bourbon cask,
correct,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have, I remember being there, and when you go into a store that has a fair amount of Kilhomans, you can see over my shoulder, maybe. I got three right there.
Yep,
I love right there. Their boxes. The colors are just great. And when you see them all, I remember being in a Kilhoman that first time, and we were in a tasting room, and they had like one of every, and this was 10 years ago, so they didn't have a whole lot of expressions back then, but it was just, everything is a different color, right? That brown one you can see over there, maybe, that's a bottled in bond. I think it's only for the U.S. market, and it's a light brown. And then you got the Mocker Bay, which is blue. And then you've got the red one, which is a single cask that for our whiskey club. And it's kind of a red finish because it was a port cask. So I really enjoy their bottling and their packaging. It's really great. Really great.
You want to taste the rainbow?
You get the rainbow. And then isn't one of them is purple? Oh, that's a Sanic. I think it's purple, right? I believe. Yeah. I'm looking at their website, and the Loch Gorm is that kind of a black sort of colored cask labeling. What's this green one? Batch Strength is green. Sanig is purple. Yeah. Yeah. Mocker Bay is blue. Yeah. I like it. I love it.
That's cool.
Well, that was delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Yum, yum, yum. All right. We're going to come back and talk about all these whiskeys shortly. Last, any other last shows we want to talk about, Ange? I got it.
I think I told you before we started, I started watching Department Q last night.
Yeah.
I watched the first two episodes. I like it. Matthew
it.
Good is fantastic.
He's great.
Yeah, he's a good actor.
He's really, really good. He's kind of, you know, keeping me going with the show.
Yeah.
And the other guy, whoever the guy they partnered up with him.
Oh,
what is he? Is he like Turkish or something? Or?
Yeah, I think he's supposed to be Syrian in the show, right?
Okay. Yeah, he's cool. I like him. Yeah, I like them both. They're really good. And the woman who plays the, the woman in charge. What's her name?
Oh, she's great. She's done a lot. She's Irish. She's great.
Yeah. Is that Leah Byrne? I think that's her. Okay, yeah, she's good. Oh, I'm not sure if it's her or is that the assistant? I don't know. I don't know who these. I can't tell who the people are, but she's very good.
Yep.
It's a good cast. It's, you know, well done British show, like the Brits do. But it's by what's his name, right? Scott Frank.
Yep. Who is from Godless and what else has he done?
Queen's Gambit.
Yep.
And Monsieur Spade.
And Mr. Spade.
Mr. Spade.
He's got a nice little resume.
He does. He really
he's
does.
He's really good.
Him, Tony Gilroy, he's one of those guys.
Yep. And I think I heard that season two has already been greenlit, so that's coming sometime.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. I had fun with it.
And it's based on a series of books. I think they're like correct. Scandinavian noir or something.
Yes. So basically, all of this isn't everything he does based on books?
Probably, yeah. But I mean, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Right? Why not adapt it?
Yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I started that. And then Sunday afternoon, I watched Friendship, which is a quirky little movie.
What's that?
It's with, what's that guy's name? I can't think of the actor's name now. Tim Robinson, who's in Detroiters.
He's crazy.
And So You Think You Can Leave?
He is nuts.
Oh, is it So You Think I Should Leave?
I don't know. Yeah, I think that's his. Is that the skit show?
He's insane.
He is nuts. Yeah.
He is absolutely insane. And it's him and Paul Rudd and Kate Mara.
Oh, my God.
Paul Rudd's great.
That's funny.
Paul Rudd's really good. It's a really uncomfortable watch. I had to, like, stop and get up and just, like, go back to it.
Tim Robinson's whole ethos is being... making you uncomfortable, right?
Oh my God, he's the king of cringe.
He is the king of cringe, yeah.
He's really good at it. It goes, a suburban dad falls hard for his charismatic new neighbor.
Is that Kate Mara, I hope?
No. It's actually Paul Rudd.
Who?
So Tim Robinson is married to Kate Mara.
Yeah.
And Paul Rudd is the new neighbor who happens to be the weather guy in Detroit.
Yeah.
And it's just,
he falls for Paul Rudd.
I mean, as a friend, he takes the friendship, he gets into the group, and all this kind of stuff.
Okay.
And as usual with Tim Robinson, if you've seen everything, things get really awkward and really weird really fast.
He is the most.
He makes me look polished and comfortable in my own skin.
Yes,
that's all I'm saying. And that's a stretch.
That's disturbing.
It is disturbing.
That's
exactly.
It really is. I'm interested in watching that now.
Yes. Yeah.
Having watched it for 20 years, I don't want to watch that anymore.
Well, you know.
Where was it, Ange? Where was it?
It's on HBO Max now. It was in the theaters.
Wow.
I actually toyed with it, but it's funny because I've been watching a lot of reviews just to see what people think of it. They're like, "Oh my God, it's hilarious." I wouldn't say it's hilarious, but it is oddly compelling. You know, it's just so strange. I went back to that show he had, not Detroiters. I really like Detroiters. Detroiters is funny. But the other one
where he's skits.
And I liked it a little better the second time around.
Yeah,
but it's still really tough.
It
goes to an extreme. I mean, it's just wild.
And the joke goes on forever.
Right? Oh, whatever my God, the joke is, never ends.
It just never ends. It just keeps going.
It never ends. It's a wacky show.
The whole thing's a callback to the joke.
Yes. Yes.
Oh. Have you watched any of it? The show.
I've watched the show. Yeah. Parts, most, not all of it.
Oh my God, the whole thing with the gift and the receipt,
yes,
and the gift receipt. Oh my God,
it's classic. Yes, for him.
Oh, you got what was that thing called? What do you call it? Cow pie.
Yes,
you got a cow pie on the receipt. Oh my God, I think I'm dying. Oh,
yeah, he's funny. He's
it was out of control. Yeah. It's out of control, and it just keeps going.
That's good. Let's see. I have a couple last ones. One I want in the middle of, I guess, kind of towards the end, is Platonic Season 2 on Apple.
Oh, yeah. How was that? Is that the one with Seth Rogen
and Rose Byrne? Yep. And Nick Stoller, who's in, you know, in the studio.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's the director, and he just won an Emmy a couple nights ago.
Yeah. Okay.
Studio did great at the Emmys. That's all Seth Rogen and Nick Stoller. I really like it. I don't know where it's going. You know, it's sort of a, maybe it's not going anywhere. If you didn't see Season 1, Rose Byrne and Seth Rogen are platonic friends. They've known each other since at least college. She's married to an attorney. She's got 3 kids. He was running a bar with a friend, or they were brewing their own beer at this bar in downtown LA. And he's always, of course, as we've talked about this before, that Seth Rogen is pretty much the same guy in every movie or every show. And he's Seth Rogen again. And his brand gets picked up by this big company down in San Diego, and he starts dating the woman that runs the company, and he's just getting himself into places that he shouldn't get to, and Rose Byrne tries to help him out. And her, you know, there's this weird thing with her and her husband. Like, why are you guys so? Why are you and Seth Rogen so close? And says, you know, because of the platonic relationship, and just it's kind of mad. It's very madcap because there's a fair amount of, like, you know, crazy Keystone Cops chase scenes and things that go on. It's very fun. It's really fun. I don't know where it's gonna go. I mean, what's happened.
Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne are getting Apple money, right?
They're getting Apple money. She had a good,
because she was in the other one, Physical, right?
She was in Physical. He's got that. He's got the studio, which is, like, you know, gonna, you know, it's a huge hit for Apple. So it's fun. It's really fun.
And for him, he set a record. He got 4 Emmys in 4 categories.
Did he really?
Really?
I didn't watch any of it. What do you
won for actor in a comedy. And then he won for Best Comedy, Best Director, which he shared, and Best Writer, which he shared.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
And the last person to do that was Dan Levy for Schitt's Creek.
Wow, that's really great.
But he got Supporting Actor, not for Best Actor.
Interesting. Well, I love Seth Rogen. He's very funny. And he's even though it's sort of, he does the same thing a lot, his characters are kind of similar. I think he's really funny. It's like Bill Murray, right? You just keep watching. Same.
Yeah. Bill Murray plays Bill Murray.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other two things I watched, let me get you, they're both maybe kind of weird. One was on HBO. Maybe. I think it was HBO. The Eastern Gate, which is a political drama, I guess. More than political drama. I heard about it from the guys on The Watch. And it was a limited series about a Polish, like the Polish version of the CIA, trying to stop a Russian red flag operation. Russian red flag? Yeah, a Russian red flag operation at the Polish border. And the actress has to go into, I think it's in Belarus, just going to Belarus and pose as the head of the consulate in the Polish consulate in Belarus and try to figure out what the hell's happening. It's gritty. It's dark. It's in Polish, but it's really good. I think it's 6 or 8 episodes. Really, really good. Whatever you call that kind of drama. I mean, there's bad military guys going on that are, you know, Belarusian, that are basically working for Putin. There's a Ukrainian aspect to it all. There's a NATO aspect to it all, so it's a little bit timely. I think I was reading somewhere that remember how we kind of go through these like periods where, oh, the Spanish stuff is really hot right now from Spain, or it's the Korean stuff that's coming out is amazing. Yeah. Well, now there's like this whole Polish movie and TV industry that is really pumping out some good stuff, and Netflix is buying up a lot of it. So really good. Highly recommend Eastern Gate. The last one I had, I really recommend it, but I'm a fan, so maybe this isn't really fair. There's a, I think it's on Netflix, is the documentary about Devo, the band.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really good. I think Devo is, what, about 55 years old now, the band?
Wow.
They started on the campus of Kent State.
Is that... That was Mark Mothersbaugh?
Mark Mothersbaugh and...
Mothersbaugh, whatever.
Yeah. His brother Bob and Jerry... Shoot, I forgot Jerry's last name.
So his mother's brother Bob? His mother's son Bob?
They start...
Whip it good.
They start while they're on campus. They don't all know each other, but they kind of come together on the campus of Kent State in 1970, right before... the Kent State shootings. They are actually on the green. These guys are students, and they were already counterculture to begin with. They were already trying to find new ways to express their art, even before they got into music. And the Kent State shooting, where they knew people that were shot, they were on the grass.
Set them off.
Yeah. Set them off. And that got them into, and it was right in the very, very beginnings of where rock and roll is starting to have this post-hippie era political change and leading into punk rock. And they're not punk rock, they're not rock, they're not, what are they? And they're just counter to all that, but they're absorbed into the punk rock world. And of course, you know, they have to kind of sell out a little bit to the big company. I think it's Warner Brothers. And it's a really interesting telling of the story of where they were, how they got there. First person account. It's really good. If you like Devo, I highly recommend it. It's nice. And these guys are aging very well. They're still out touring. And I saw them myself a couple years ago, and they're still great. They're just really fun.
Mid to late 70s for these guys?
Yeah, definitely. Yes. Right?
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. Totally.
Wow.
They are, well, they were in college in 1970. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, geez.
They are not young guys. And they all have very interesting, interests. So the band's sort of falling apart at one point, and Mothersbaugh decides, I got to do something else. So he gets into producing music videos, soundtrack, you know, the number of soundtracks that guy's been a part of is crazy, right? Rugrats, doing that kind of stuff. And they really, Jerry Casal is the name I was looking for. Jerry Casal has other music projects. He's a winery guy. He's got a winery up in Northern California. He's into tiki music. These guys are all over the place. They're really interesting, artsy people, and still kicking at this age. It's great. They're born all in the late 1940s, so it's pretty amazing. So that's the Devo documentary on Netflix. I think it's Netflix. So
cool.
Yeah, we had a good smattering of TV stuff here tonight and some.
Yeah, a couple movies, all kinds of fun stuff.
All kinds of good stuff. There's a lot of good stuff out and a lot of stuff coming. It felt like a month or two ago, there's really nothing to watch. And all of a sudden, it's just boom. It's like typical. All these things are getting released. And I just started watching, not to change the topics here, just started watching Murder in the Building. What's that called?
Oh yeah, Only Murders
the Building has a new season out. Yep. It's all coming with the falls, like the fall, everything's coming, right?
Well, we made the jump yesterday, and we left traditional cable and went to straight streaming.
Really?
So, now I'll be left with no alternative but to watch all the stuff you knuckleheads keep talking about.
Really, really well. That was that.
You know, the one thing we did watch that I didn't mention, we went and did a rewatch. My wife was a huge fan of Jaws. Her father took her to see it when she was 3 or 4 years old.
Jaws, the movie?
The movie Jaws. For its 50th anniversary, they re-released it.
Yeah.
Okay. So she really wanted to take the kids to go see Jaws. And as she's taking it, she's talking about how she went to go see it when she was little with her parents. And I'm thinking, you were like 3 or 4 years old. This is really bad parenting. This is just terrible. Why would you ever want to go in the water ever after
seeing this movie? You know, I saw Apocalypse Now with my dad when it came out. I was 12.
That's not good parenting. Kirby Fully Loaded.
I will never forget that movie.
No, you won't.
You know what's interesting? You know what's interesting about that movie, though? I saw it. Remember the Goldman Theater? Right around City Hall?
Yeah.
I saw it there, and I think the guy who was like seated a couple like seats away from me, he was probably a Vietnam War vet, and I remember he was in full. He was like in uniform when he was watching the movie.
He thought
like,
it was Rocky Horror. He was.
I remember his leg was shaking throughout the whole thing. He was going through some stuff.
Well, watching a movie like
this was 1979. It's only 4 years after the war ended.
Yeah, that would be very triggering, I would say.
Yeah, you were 12 then. That's fine.
I was like, what's up with this guy? But yeah.
Yeah, so we went to go see Jaws again. And I got to tell you, it still kind of holds up.
I can see
it's a good movie.
The special effects aren't what you'd expect, but it wasn't so bad. And the threesome, they're just so good.
You know what, though? I don't like Richard Dreyfuss at all.
They're so good. Yeah, but in that, he's very good.
He just chews the scenery. Just give him my drapes, and he'll just chew the curtains.
I think... little off the topic here. Just thinking back of that era and those Spielberg movies, I can see them all really holding up.
Yeah.
E.T., not a lot of them do.
I can see E.T. holding up. Yeah. I can see Close Encounters holding up.
Not a fan.
I mean, if you strip away the special effects because of the era, it's 50 years ago. The storytelling is still really good, I think.
He puts together a good cast.
Oh yeah,
I mean, and I don't deny his talent. I'm not a big Spielberg fan, but I can't deny the man's talent.
Yeah,
Roy Scheider is really good.
Scheider's good.
Richard Dreyfuss is good as a young Richard Dreyfuss. This is probably one of his.
And of course, Robert Shaw.
Fourth movies.
Shaw's great.
And he's talking about a guy chewing scenery. That guy.
Oh yeah,
incredible.
But it works though.
That guy's incredible. I don't mean in a bad way. I mean every scene he's in, you're just like, I don't want it to end.
I think we're going to need a bigger boat.
And when they do the whole thing with the tattoos, going back and forth, getting who got bit, all the scars and everything, and you're just like, right here, Mary Louise, she stole my heart.
No, I'm glad. I don't know anyone else that saw the 50. Was it any different? Did they do anything different?
No, I'm going to guess they digitally remastered it so that the visual aspect of it is improved with the new technology.
Yeah.
But they didn't like redo the special effects or anything.
No added scenes.
It's still Bruce the Shark doing what Bruce the Shark does.
Yeah.
But it was really good, and you don't realize that's John Williams.
Yeah, that's right.
And like, wow, that was how about that?
Yeah,
they're all John Williams.
Yes.
How about that? Yeah, but you don't really like. Your first big movie, you got John Williams to be the guy? But at the time, I guess, maybe John Williams wasn't the guy.
Yeah, he was.
Well, that's 50 years ago, right? He was probably like 30.
Wars? Yeah. Right.
But it was really well done then, and I enjoyed it now.
That's good.
What year was Jaws? Was that 77?
75. It's their 40th anniversary.
Oh, it's 75? Okay, yeah, because then Star Wars was 77. Rocky was, I think, 75 or 76. Yeah. A lot of good stuff, man. The 70s were a hotbed of movies.
It really was. Yeah. Now, since we're talking movies here, I never go to movies because I can't stay awake. I actually went to a movie recently. I actually saw the Naked Gun movie.
Oh yeah, that's right. I saw that too.
What's it called? Naked Gun.
Naked Gun.
It's just called Naked Gun.
I think it's just the Naked Gun.
With Liam Neeson and Pam Anderson, and
it was okay.
You saw it too, right?
I saw it too.
Yeah,
I forgot about
it. Wasn't
that
great. It wasn't,
but it was okay.
It was okay. I have to. There was a couple places I did laugh out loud. Most of it was
only one scene that really laughed the most was the whole thing with the car and the hot dogs.
That was funny. Yeah.
The thing that you don't realize is that Leslie Nielsen's a complete banana.
Yep.
And he doesn't turn into the skid. He is inside the skid when things turn to him.
Yeah.
He caused the skid. And you wonder, like, when you get Liam Neeson to do this, is he going to be able to do that? And he's just as wacky as Leslie Nielsen was. Like, he just is like, sure, what do you want to do? Okay, sure.
He's in a
Ted movie. He's in Ted 2.
Oh, is he?
And Seth MacFarlane asked him, could you be in this? And he said, yeah, all right, I'll be in it. And his whole scene involves buying a box of Lucky Charms and making sure he's allowed to have it because it's, you know, or a box of tricks because tricks are for kids and he's not a kid. You sure I can take this? You sure I'm allowed to have this? He's like throwing extra money on the counter and trying to put the box under his jacket. He's like, no, man, just buy a box of cereal. What's wrong with you?
I'm not a big Liam Neeson fan, and I wish there was somebody else that did this, was the lead.
Right.
I would have probably enjoyed it more. It's hard for me to get past that. It's Liam Neeson from all these like serious movies.
But it's just crazy that he would be in this.
It is crazy. Like, really? It is crazy is he was. Okay. He was.
I guess you're insane. Sure.
I thought Pam Anderson was really good in it.
She was.
Right? She was very good in it. And everyone else was. It was actually a very good homage to the first movie. It really crossed some lines that you wouldn't expect to
be blinded, but like
cross today that, you know, nowadays everything gets canceled if you say anything wrong. Look at Jimmy Kimmel today. I was surprised they went to some places that they did, which I enjoyed because the first movie and Airplane, all those shows did that. Zucker Abrams group were always about pushing the limit, and they were this kind of did that a little bit. I mean, I wish it did a little bit more. I wish it was a little bit funnier.
I don't love those movies. I was never a big fan of them. I mean, they're okay. I like them, but I don't love them.
I loved them. And
well, they got the whole Marx Brothers thing going, which is joke after joke after joke after joke. So,
well, and the,
which you like
the,
so.
Naked Gun show became a TV show for like 8 episodes after the movie.
Right. Police Squad.
Police Squad. And it's been showing on one of these channels that it's all old TV shows. It is Pluto, so funny. And Leslie Nielsen is so great. He is so great. He's like Ted Knight. Right? He's Ted Knight.
Like deadpan.
Who's like this classic actor who's playing this deadpan character. He's so good. It's just really funny. And so would I recommend it? I don't know. If you're a fan of the original movie, don't go in thinking you're going to see the original movie, but go in thinking this is going to be a nice tribute to the original movie.
You'll be entertained.
You'll be entertained. Yeah. So boy, we outlasted our regular list and we went into a couple other places, which was fun. Let's revisit these whiskeys again and thank our friends at Kilhoman because we have friends there, at Impex because we have friends there, Sam and Chris, thank you very much, and Jeanette for sending us these wonderful samples in the celebration of the 20th anniversary of Kilhoman. Congratulations to them all. Talk about these last three boys. What do we think about them all?
Oh, they were all very good.
You know, if you like that sort of thing, you know, well-crafted whiskey with lots of flavor. I mean, sure, they're okay.
They've done a lot in 20 years. It's pretty incredible. It's pretty incredible.
I'm shocked that the anniversary is only for 20.
Yeah.
But I thought it was going to be like, you know, like you said, 200 years anniversary. I didn't realize they're 20 years.
They are only 20 years old.
Yeah. Coming out of the gate, they started knocking people around. Yeah.
Yes, they really did. They were the new kid on the block, and they are now not old timers, but, you know, 20
years. Yeah, I remember when they were originally like 2 and 3 year old whiskeys.
That's right. Yeah.
I think I'd say that the 13 year was my favorite.
I think,
and then the 14 year, and then the Muscatel. That's not saying that I didn't like all of
them. But it's just you have to pick a favorite.
It's like children.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
I love that the 13 and the 14.
Christina.
Yeah, I love the 13 and the 14. They're really great. I mean.
Oh, speaking of that, did you take a test?
Yeah, she took her test today.
Okay, good. Sorry, we got a doctor in the house.
Oh, really?
A doctor's.
Oh, congratulations.
A physician assistant.
Practically a doctor.
Close enough.
We'll find out next week. Okay. But yeah, so the the Muscatel, really nice whiskey. I just don't see drinking that regularly. Like with Emilia, you said as a an aperitif or a digestif, sure. The sherry cask, that was boy, if you like sherry whiskeys, that's a really good whiskey.
Yep.
Just really good. But as for like an everyday, I think the 13 holds up with anything else.
Hell yeah, on a daily basis.
I just pour it a little bit more, and it is so.
Yeah, same.
That's a great whiskey.
It is so freaking good.
You know what? You know what we didn't do. We didn't cheers.
Oh, no. We did not do that. How did we miss that?
No. So you know what? So
well, this
cheers
is to Kilhoman.
To Kilhoman.
Yeah.
And their 20th anniversary.
Yes.
Cheers.
Well done. All right, boys.
Imagine not drinking anything. Good for me.
That was great. That was great. And again, cheers to Kilhoman. Well done, and hopefully another 20 to 100 years for you guys. To Anthony and his sons and the whole crew there.
Well, or at least for as long as we're still alive.
That's right. Yes.
And well, and maybe 2026 is our trip to Scotland.
Oh, I would love to go back.
We go to see them.
And
there you go.
I got to tell you, their brand ambassador, Catherine McMillan, is just a wonderful, just really wonderful person. Really fun, really nice. She's been here to California a couple times. She's great. So cheers to them. Cheers. Thank you again to everyone at Impex. Thank you again for sending these wonderful samples. This will be out on a podcast in about a week or so.
Yep.
Correct. Thank you for tuning in. If you were tuning in on all our little places online. And we will see you soon with another live stream / podcast very soon. Shall we play it out?
All right. Cheers, folks.
Cheers.
If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.